Thank you very much, David Cunliffe and David Parker. Ladies and gentlemen, questions?
Mr. Rock, what changed your mind and your previous positions around, especially the age of National Super, given your previous positions? Has it been the Sean Braids and the Prefer and getting asked in the last year or so around?
I think policy evolves as circumstances change, and two critical things have certainly been a double credit rating downgrade, the first time in 13 years that we've been downgraded, and the explicit comments by Standard & Poor's as to why that happened. Secondly, because the international, the global financial situation remains very uncertain, and I don't think that New Zealand can withstand future external or internal shocks unless we make significant changes.
What are you saying to Māori New Zealanders whose life expectancy is well below other New Zealanders, 7 or 8 years? What do you say to them working all their lives and dying before they get to silver? That's going to exacerbate under any new
Well, three things. Firstly, we need to address and are addressing or were addressing the reasons for lower life expectancy, and Māori life expectancy is increasing, but the gap is still there. You don't deal with the problem of life expectancy at the end of somebody's life, you deal with it at the beginning. Secondly, the transitional arrangements for super will take into account people that are not able to work, and those will be reasonably generously interpreted. Thirdly, as you'll see from one of the policy documents, we will also have the tripartite dialogue group considering concepts such as a variable age of retirement.
So is that in the manner of the way this benefit might be qualified? I mean, or is it just that you weren't able to do the job you were currently doing? I mean, if I could switch to another job that wasn't manual labour, for example, would I have to
You know, the details of that will need to be worked through. This is 8 years before this comes into effect. A lot of changes will happen between now and then, including an increasing life expectancy on the part of Māori. But I imagine that it will be reasonably generously interpreted that if you are not readily able to be in the workforce in the job that you've spent your lifetime in, then you could well qualify for that transitional arrangement.
Government save by introducing a 67 age of entitlement by 2033. It's the one figure I couldn't actually see.
From memory, I've seen something that says that probably further out than you're talking about, by about 2050, that there is $100 billion in savings. But I'll just ask my colleagues if they have that figure at hand.
It's easier to put a percentage of GDP number on it under the models that we've got, which we've adapted from the savings working group, than to put a very specific dollar figure on it. We can reduce our net international debt by around 17% of GDP, which is a very large amount, over 20 years. By comparison, you'd only get about 4% reduction in international debt under the national plan.
This is as important as you're all arguing it is. Mm-hmm. Why wait three electoral cycles before implementing it? Because a lot can happen in three elections. There's actually no guarantee that any of this will actually occur.
I think what you've got to look at is the package as a whole. And two parts of that package will come into effect quite quickly, which is the Universal KiwiSaver Scheme and the restarting of contributions to the New Zealand Super Fund. The third area is actually following the Retirement Commissioner's recommendations in terms of a fair time frame to phase that in. It's gradual enough for people that might be affected by that to make preparations for that change. What we're saying is it's more honest to be upfront about that now than to say, I won't do this while I'm Prime Minister, knowing that it's going to happen by that time frame anyway. The problem will be worse and people will have less time to adjust for it.
On the compulsory KiwiSaver costs, have you taken into account the possibility or even the likelihood that once you introduce that, people will think, oh, well, I'm going to be forced into it in 3 years' time, I'll jump into it now and get the $1,000 up front rather than have it, you know, drip feed over the following 5 years?
Yeah. David?
We've built in
Councillor.
Very similar conservative assumptions as the current government's auto enrolment assumptions, and we also looked at the savings working groups modelling. I can't give you a precise figure on the amount of costs associated with that, but we're thinking about 30 to 40% of people would have opted out under the auto enrolment scheme. So all of that becomes an increment under the compulsory scheme. I realise I'm not addressing exactly the point you're raising, but I'm not going to stray from the official information I have in front of me.
Do you have a number of workers born after 1995
We believe that 720,000 people, if I recall the number correctly, would be brought into the scheme.
That's on compulsory saving. Yeah, I think the question is about retirement age.
Oh, and the retirement age. Yeah. I haven't got a precise figure on that, sorry.
Right.
That 100,000 savings. Do you
Oh, we can find that out for you. It's a figure that I've seen here.
It was something
around that. Let's come back to you with a precise figure so that it's absolutely right.
Theme here of on your tripartite consultation once you sort of get this rolling.
Mm-hmm.
And is there an implicit message here that if you want to stay in this, you've got to join a union?
No, there isn't. What we're saying is that we've set out the parameters of the policy because it's a government's job to lead. But in terms of working out the detail of the policy, it makes a lot of sense to consult with businesses and employees in order to make sure that we've got the detail right.
Are you saying that the 0.5% contribution from the employer will be made instead of a pay increase or on top of?
I think it'll come from a variety of sources, and it'll depend on the state of the business, both at the time and the general economic environment. But I imagine that the additional contribution will come out of, for example, increased profitability, increased productivity, but also out of the projected figure that Treasury uses of a 3.8% increase in wage rise per annum over the forecast period.
Industrial-related policy, you talk about industry standards. I mean, can that somehow be meshed into that?
Well, we don't know quite how many industries will pick up an industry standard agreement, but that would be a way. What I'm figuring from the industry standard agreements is that more employers will become involved in the collective bargaining process and sign up to collective agreements if it's going to affect them.
If you're going to have a $15 minimum wage and contributions, what, up to 7% from the employer, is it? Ultimately, you're loading a lot of extra cost on it. Are you confident there'll be no impact on unemployment from these policies?
I'm confident that that won't be a significant cause of unemployment, and I guess I'd look across the Tasman at Australia, where they're confident they can lift the employer contribution to 12% without having a significant impact.
Can we add to that?
Yes, please, David.
I think there's several factors here. First is that the projected rate of wage increase is about 3.8% according to the pre-food, so 0.5%, even if it were all taken out of future wage increases, would leave workers still making significant real wage gains. So that's the first point. Second point is savings working groups done some modelling on a very similar increase in the savings rate that our scheme delivers, and they modelled out an increase of 10% of GDP over about 20 years. And that comes because the reduction to our overseas debt lowers interest rates. Lower interest rates, lower exchange rates. Lower exchange rates improve exports, and it's a particular boost to the manufacturing sector. So I think the message to business would be there is an enormous amount to gain from putting savings on a sustainable footing, having a higher pool of investment capital available, and getting our net overseas debt position down, because it'll be easier to borrow and easier to export. And workers will benefit from that too.
A higher saving rate very clearly does add to the prospects of economic growth and wage growth.
But there's no guarantee that a higher pool of savings will be invested in New Zealand, particularly if you give it to fund managers. What stops them?
That's an important point, if I may, from an important point, Brian, which we'll be going into in more detail in the next chapter of the integrated economic policy approach, which is the economic development chapter. We totally agree with you. The transmission mechanism from the savings pool to real business investment in New Zealand is a very important step in the chain, and we'll be addressing that too, but it's complex and it's not an issue for today.
Another option looked at by the Savings Working Group was to create a large default provider, so have a single default scheme for KiwiSaver. Did you guys look at that, because they said it could get costs down?
Yeah, we haven't made any decision about that. That's possibly an issue that would be looked at by the tripartite dialogue group.
Superannuation entitlement, how high risk of political gamble is this? I mean, there must be a very good reason why politicians haven't touched it since 1976.
Yeah, I think that what you need to do, if you're showing real leadership, is to make the right decision for tomorrow, the right decision for the country, rather than making the easy decision for today. And I think if there's any criticism, including from the media, about politicians over time, is that they think in narrow three-year electoral cycles. It's time to show the courage to make the right decision, even though it's a tough decision, if you actually believe in creating a better future for your country and your kids. That's what we're doing.
It begs the question, why haven't you guys had the courage to do this sooner and in fact have consistently avoided it right up until now?
Well, I think that it would probably be acknowledged even by this cynical group that the sort of policies that Labor has come out with, both on the capital gains tax and on our savings policy, is the first time that a political party, a major political party, has had the guts to do what is right for the country, rather than simply the easy decision to try to please people in the short term. But let me add one other thing to that. Actually, I've got confidence that New Zealanders do understand that these hard decisions have to be taken. I've been around the country in recent weeks, and people at almost every meeting that I have done have raised these sort of questions with me. When are you going to introduce a compulsory savings scheme? Why does New Zealand think that it's different and somehow better than the United States, Australia or the United Kingdom in being able to have people retire earlier when each of us are living 11 years longer than what was the case at the start of the 1950s?
When you first took over as leader, you apologised for being too many state under the previous administration. You could argue that compulsory savings is the ultimate administration.
You might argue that. I believe that it's incumbent on leadership to make the right decision that is necessary for the future of your country, and I think we've got to that position.
You'll be resuming super fund payments before the books are, sorry, it's been asked before the books are forecast to return to surplus.
That's right.
Borrowing to put in the fund, and you're hoping that the super fund makes higher returns than the interest you're paying on that debt?
Well, it's not simply hope. If you look at what's been happening with the super fund, the rate of return on the super fund has been many times the cost of the basic Crown interest rate on debt that it undertakes. Yes, there'll be an element of borrowing to begin with, but the return on the super fund is necessary. It will more than compensate for the cost of the interest rate.
So would you recommend that other New Zealanders do that, borrow a bunch of money from the...
No, because other New Zealanders aren't in the position of being able to borrow at the rates that a government can, and I think you understand that.
So are you saying then that if that assumption is correct, and it carries on that way, the only real costs in this package are the extensions to KiwiSaver?
The main costs will be another 723,000 people coming into KiwiSaver and getting the member tax credit and getting the kickstart. They are the significant costs. They range upwards, I think they peak at about $373 million and come down to about $200 million. But that's well within the scope of the amount of money that is left in the additional $1.1 billion that the Treasury has got in the government's books that won't be taken up in terms of just meeting rises in costs.
Well, can you increase the national savings rate faster and more efficiently simply by running the budget surplus?
I don't think that necessarily follows. Do you want to comment on that one?
The issue here is what's the problem we're trying to solve, and as the graph that David Parker showed, our primary issue is private international debt, not public debt. And there is no way that we could reduce public expenditure far enough to fill in the private debt hole. We have to get the incentives in the tax system right so people don't over-leverage on property, and we have a strong private savings scheme. And as I said before, Labor's scheme is going to create a private savings flow roughly four times the size of the National Party's auto enrolment proposal.
But most of the extra debt now we have is government debt. The private sector has largely stopped increasing its foreign debt so much.
Surely the
best way and fastest way to improve the national savings rate is for the government to step up.
Well, both National and Labor, to be fair to our opponents, are reducing our government debt, and we both plan to reduce net Crown debt to zero within our projected period.
But the total cost of this policy over 7 years, as you detail, is about $2 billion, which could have been used to repay government.
But there is a leverage factor here in stimulating greater flows of private savings than the cost to the Crown, much greater flows. And that leaves out the previous question, which was the earnings ability of the New Zealand Superannuation Fund over and above the cost of any borrowing, because the Crown has a sovereign credit rating and a lower interest rate.
I see it's pretty simple. New Zealand doesn't have a government debt problem. We've got a short-term government deficit, which the current government says they'll get under control, and so we will, and we've said we will too. But we've got a long-term private debt problem, and that's the serious problem that's holding New Zealand back, and the comparison with Australia stands out pretty obviously to me. And we've got to do better on private savings. So this is mainly about private savings, not public debt.
Isn't there a risk that you'll get substitution, more money going into KiwiSaver but less into bank deposits, greater reliance by the banks on tight foreign funding markets?
We've modelled that the same way as the Savings Working Group did. Pretty conservative assumptions. 37% of the additional money that goes in private people into KiwiSaver is estimated to be additional savings. The rest is a substitute. 33% in respect of employer and government contributions. Those are very conservative assumptions, just as our assumptions around capital gains tax are conservative. There's no doubt that this is going to increase private savings.
Net real private savings will certainly increase under this scenario. I just want to make one more point and then come to your question. If you look at somebody on a minimum wage that will be contributing about $11 a week into this, if they go into a KiwiSaver program at the start of their working life, they'll end up with about $400,000 plus as a nest egg for retirement. One of the saddest things I see around my electorate are people that go into retirement with the only source of income being National Super and no particular assets. And it's a retirement to fear rather than a retirement to enjoy. One of the critical things we'll do through this policy is allow many more New Zealanders to look forward to a retirement that they can actually enjoy. Question.
Kind of what the political, you think the political will be like around this kind of coalition partners saying the Greens have no plans to change the Act from 65, it's not their policy right now. The Māori Party is unlikely to go along with it, and New Zealand First, I would imagine, would be pretty anti it. What's your view on that?
Labor is putting forward the policy that we think is the right policy for New Zealand's future. After the election, if we're in a position to form a government, there'll be a negotiation, but this will be a fundamental policy as part of Labor's basic program going forward. I think that when any New Zealand considers the figures that we've set out for you today, they will understand that we cannot go on doing nothing, that people are living longer, they are working longer. By the time this comes into effect, actually, you'll probably have more than half of the workforce between the age of 65 and 69 already in the workforce. And our big challenge, and one that will be shared with the other parties, is that it's not just the doubling of the cost of superannuation, but it'll be the skyrocketing cost in health care. Because two-thirds of the money spent on your health care during your lifetime comes after the age of 65.
So regardless of the
outcome... I'm sorry, can I...
So this will be a bottom line for
Labor? It's part of our fundamental policy, yes.
Could one argue that this is just posturing for 2014? Announce all the big bad policies now, then over the next 3 years, pock off the little ones that people don't like.
To the contrary, this is a good policy, It's a good policy for the future of this country because it enables us to invest in our country, our businesses, to grow our jobs, to own our own future. And it's a good policy because it allows more New Zealanders to approach their retirement with a sense of a retirement to enjoy, not a fear of being able to live only on a subsistence amount, which is what National Super provides.
So just to clarify, Labor's committing to this policy regardless of the election outcome beyond this electoral term?
This is a fundamental policy for Labor, yes.
So it's not just this 3 years, regardless of the election outcome, Labor would stick with it beyond the next election, even if it lost.
The policy that we're putting forward is policy that we believe in.
Mr. Clark, can I ask one question for a colleague about it to another story today? Would Labor ban foreign crew fishing vessels in New Zealand waters?
We'd more likely enforce what we put into place before in terms of minimum wage and conditions on those that are crewing foreign ships, foreign crew on fishing vessels in our water. I would also have to say that we'd be working pretty closely with the iwi authorities to try to encourage a process of having more New Zealanders crew those ships rather than foreign crews.
So you wouldn't have a quota of New Zealand crew on these ships?
How we do it will be a process of negotiation. But it seems crazy that we have a third of our Maori teenage boys unemployed and a lot of iwi authorities are employing foreign crews.
By making KiwiSaver compulsory, does the government have a responsibility to provide some sort of guarantee on those savings?
There is no proposal to guarantee those savings, but people will have the option of going for a conservative scheme where there is very high certainty in the security of their investment.
Including investment in government bonds?
Yeah, including that. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.